This is the Graceful Atheist Podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast. My name is David, and I am trying to be the Graceful Atheist. Please consider rating and reviewing the podcast on the Apple Podcast Store. You can rate the podcast on Spotify and subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening. Be sure to tell a friend about the podcast. That is truly the way the podcast grows. The Deconversion Anonymous Facebook group continues to grow and thrive. Come be a part of the community. Join at facebook.com/groups/deconversion. Special thanks to Mike T for editing today's podcast. On to today's show. My guest today is Dave Gosin. Dave grew up in the Mennonite tradition. He was a dedicated member and married his wife within a very similar Mennonite tradition. They raised their kids, and it wasn't until Dave was 50 years old and his son gave him a book on evolution that Dave began to doubt. Dave had a running partner who was a doctor who was also deconstructing on his own, and they had many a deep conversation out on the road. Ultimately today, Dave is a hopeful agnostic. Telling his wife was the most gut-wrenching, difficult thing as she remains a believer. Second only to his wife's cancer scare, which she survived. Dave and I share a number of points of similarity in our stories, and I really enjoyed this conversation. Dave has an eloquent way with words, and so almost everything that comes out of his mouth is significant and wise. Here is Dave Gosin to tell his story. Dave, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast.
Thank you, David. It's great to be with you today.
Thank you for reaching out to me. It sounds like we have a lot of points of similarity in our story, so I'm excited to get into that. I also feel like it's important that we have adults on who have gone through some deconstruction, deconversion, and the focus tends to be so much on Gen Z. And it's important, I think, sometimes just to hear from people who have lived out their faith for sometimes decades and still come to a place where they have to question things.
Yeah, I appreciate the term adult. you could also refer to me as a senior because I have turned 60 this year. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Yeah. So let's begin with what was your faith tradition when you were growing up?
Yeah, so I grew up in the Mennonite Brethren faith. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with that that term, but basically it would be a fairly conservative brand of Mennonitism, but not conservative to the point of, you know, so a lot of people would think black bumpers or horse and buggy when they think Mennonite, and that's not what, you know, not my, right, my past, but a fairly conservative evangelical form of Mennonitism. So, it was, we still used instruments in church and that sort of a thing. Things like playing cards were frowned upon, and definitely dancing was frowned upon and things like that. So pretty conservative, pretty careful, and at the same time, fairly evangelical.
Okay. Was it a fairly tight-knit community?
I would say so. And it was very much encouraged, even in my day, to marry within the church, for sure. Okay. You know? And even to the point of, as I said, I came from the Mennonite Brethren Church. My girlfriend, who became my wife, was from the United Mennonite Church. And that was... to some people, that was a big difference.
Okay.
And so when we got married, it was not a big deal, but 30, 40, 50 years before that, it was quite a big thing to marry outside the church. So pretty close-knit group of people who did business together, who married each other and stayed within the church.
And then internally for you, was this something that you were kind of just following along with your parents, or was it something that you took on for yourself personally?
So you know, I knew nothing else. And so I grew up in the church. My dad, I should say, was a pastor. And so I grew up a preacher's kid.
Okay.
And so from a very young age, of course, that's all I really knew. And so, you know, I accepted Jesus into my heart when I was 5 or 6 years old. And the people that loved me the most told me that that was a good idea, and they were very proud of me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so when you know nothing else, it seems very normal. And everything you do within the, you know, the confines of your life seemed very normal. And there was very little opportunity to get to know people who were from outside of our church, because just about everything was done within the confines of the Mennonite Brethren Church.
And then as you grew up, like the age of reason, was that bumpy, or were you still fairly committed?
I was pretty committed. I think I was not much of a questioner in my early days, and even through high school. I think, you know, there were more important things, like girls and sports and things like that. And I was quite happy to follow along with what my church prescribed. I went to a Mennonite high school, which is where I met my wife. So I think, you know, I was quite happy to follow along. I wasn't questioning at that point in time. From what I recall, I was quite happy to toe the party line, and it all seemed to make sense. And all my friends were within the faith, and so, and you know, they weren't questioning, I don't think, for the most part. So it all seemed to be, you know, one big happy family that seemed to get along quite nicely. And no questions on faith at that point in time. The questions for me came quite a bit later.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's just continue chronologically for a while. In your young adulthood, let's say your 20s, 30s, what was that like then?
Yeah, that was just life happening, I think. It was a busy time with kids. My wife and I had three great kids, and continued to attend church. Now, the other thing I should mention is that we left the MB church. So when we got married, we attended her church, which was, as I mentioned, a United Mennonite church. So a little more focused on the social agenda of and not so much evangelicalism, I would say.
Right. The social gospel, actually feeding the poor, taking care of the
widow. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The United Mennonite church is focused much more on that. And at the time, I don't think I even noticed a difference, to be quite honest with you. But in my adult life, I definitely noticed a difference between the two churches.
Okay.
And you know, what they preach from the pulpit. So we began attending the United Mennonite Church, and our kids grew up in it. And it was, for the most part, a good, close community as well, and very loving. And our kids enjoyed it. And things were busy, and I was involved in, you know, a variety of things within the church, a number of committees. It wasn't unusual for my wife and I to be at the church 2, 3, or 4 nights a week, that sort of a thing. Quite involved. Our kids were quite involved. And that's really how it played out through many, many years as our kids grew up, you know.
Okay.
The church was a big part of our life.
Before we get to the questioning, one of the things that you mentioned that we have in common is running. So I'm just curious, in general, where does running come into play as a part of your story?
Yeah, running started when I was about 40, maybe actually, sorry, a little bit before that, probably 35. So I've been running for about 25 years, and a good buddy of mine invited me on a run, and I thought to myself, why would I do that? and then I went on a run, and I think, you know, it was about 5 miles or something like that. We got back, and I was completely completely exhausted. And the next day he said to me, you know what, Dave, you did pretty well for your first run out.
Yeah.
And at that time I was an auto mechanic. I was in reasonable shape. And, you know, when you're only 35 years old, you can run for a while. So he said that, and it was a source of encouragement to me. And I thought, and after the run, I thought to myself, I'll never do that again. Like, why would I do that? But the more he encouraged, the more I went out, and I just got really addicted to it. And it didn't take long. Within a month or two or three, I was getting out two and three times a week, and then it became five. And then, you know, we ran together all the time, him and I, and it was great to have a running partner like him.
Yeah.
He was an awesome guy. And we just got into it more and more, where we began to do races, and we went, from 5 and 10 Ks to half marathons to marathons. And just had a lot of, I'm sure you've done some training, so you know how many miles you can, or how much time you can spend on the road.
Yes.
And if you have a running partner, you end up with a lot of talk time.
Yeah.
And as you'll hear in my story later, that was part of, what led me to deconstruct, for sure.
Okay. All right.
This guy that I ran with. So, yeah. Yeah. So, for me, it's therapy. It's 50% physical and 50% therapy. I just find it a great way to start my day. I'm a morning runner, and I just find it calming, and it helps me to, relieve any anxiety that I might have. I just find it great for my mental health.
Well, Dave, you're definitely telling my story. I think it was, I ran in high school, and then I pretty much dropped it for a decade and a half or so, came back at about 37. And I was like, I really want to run a marathon. It probably took me 3 years to actually get that done, like to get to a marathon. And then I spent the next decade trying to run a marathon fast. I feel like I'm in the phase of my life now where I really, I just enjoy running for running's sake. I haven't been training for anything lately, but I 100% agree with you that it is 50% physical, 50% mental. It really helps me. I think the only thing we do differ on is I am definitely not a morning person. So, but anyway. So it sounds like you've got a really good friend who, you're having probably very deep discussions with over a number of topics as you're out running. Where did some of the questioning or some of the cracks start to show?
Yeah, so I think it was probably about 10 years ago when it began for me. So you're talking about a 50-year-old man who's been in his faith his entire life and knows nothing else, really. And I think, over those 50 years, there was definitely questioning times, but I was able to put it to the back of my mind, or just, I think the answer for me most of the time was, leave it to God, and don't worry about those questions. Leave it to God. I mean, I think that's what I was told by parents, by people around me, people I admired, that questioning is okay as long as you end up on the right side of the question, which is either finding the right answer or leaving it to God.
Right.
And so for many years, I just did that. I think, the two big things for me, one thing that happened in our church was I became involved in a search committee where we found a new pastor.
Okay.
And the pastor that ended up coming to our church ended up actually getting a pretty poor vote from the membership. In fact, he got about 65%, but okay. It was enough for a calling. And I thought to myself, when I went to see him and tell him the news, I thought to myself, he's never going to accept this. But in the end, he did. So long story short, it ended up being a pretty tough time for him and a pretty tough time for the search committee because he left in short order. And I think, for me, what the takeaway from that was that people are people wherever you go. Mm. So regardless whether it's a chess club or regardless whether it's any sort of organization, people can be unloving and nasty, even in a church. And I found that out with people just, you know, refusing to talk to me because of what had happened and things like that. So it was a really difficult time for me. I felt I'd failed the church, and a lot of people seemed to kind of agree with me.
Yeah, okay. So, they blamed you then?
Yeah, there was definitely some blame for what had occurred, and I was a leader of that committee, so I think I took a lot of the blame. So difficult time there, and it just, you know, in finding that, you know, it didn't seem like God's love really, you know, came through these people. It just seemed like they were just like anybody else in their response to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I mean that was tough for me to go through. The other thing that happened was I was involved in a committee that brought a family from Syria to Canada. And this family had a Muslim faith, were Muslims.
Okay.
And it was a great experience in bringing them across. It was a lot of work. And again, a committee of about six or eight people were involved in this. And I was heading it up. And I got to know the family, specifically the husband, the man of the household.
Okay.
And what I realized was that this guy had an amazing faith. Mm-hmm. His faith was just different than mine.
Right.
And so I really began to grapple with this and say to myself, well, you know, if I was born in that country, I would have probably embraced that faith.
Yeah.
And if he was born in my country, he would have probably embraced my faith. So what is truth, and what does truth even look like? And so that was a really tough one for me. And I asked a lot of people that same question, and I never got a great answer for it.
Yeah.
And so I think I came away from that whole experience, you know, with a lot of positives from getting to know this family and helping them. But the thing I also came away with was that, you know, religion for the most part, is a big part of it is the family you're born into and the geography in which you're born.
Yeah.
And I couldn't come up with a better answer than that, and no one could. So that, you know, I started wondering about the truth of what I believed. So then I started getting into reading, and my oldest son, who had already left the faith and who is an atheist, he said, "Dad, are you interested in a book on evolution?" And I said, "Well, yeah, sure." And he had one at home, and so he gave it to me. And I remember being about 10 pages in and saying to myself, "This is reality." Mm. It hit me like a brick over the head. And I knew that, you know, what I had taken as literal in Genesis 1 and 2 was not factual. I felt that way quite quickly after getting into that book. I read the whole book. And I remember that being a really hard time. I remember my heart beating pretty fast and thinking to myself, I think I'm losing my faith.
Oof. Yeah,
I think this is it, you know. And, you know, as a 50 or 55 year old man, it was something like that when I started, you know, into this whole process. And when you know nothing else, and when that's your whole life, your family, your friends, everything, boy, that was a tough thing.
Yeah.
Actually, really, really sad, to be quite honest with you, because I didn't want it to be true. I wanted to read this book on evolution and say, you know what, that's, you know, I can see right through this. You know, I'll go back to the Bible and believe that that's true, but I just couldn't do it. Hmm. After reading this book, it was so logical, and it just made so much sense. And so from there, you know, I said to myself, well, if Genesis 1 and 2 aren't true, then what else isn't true?
A very dangerous question. Yes.
Yeah. And as many people told me when I chatted with them, they said it was a slippery slope, and it certainly is.
Exactly.
And so when the Jenga tower begins to, you know, begins to fall, it falls big time. And so evolution was the first one. And then, you know, the more I read of the Bible, the more I just thought to myself, these are simply stories put together by human minds and human pens. And these are books that were written a few thousand years ago and give an idea of what people thought about God, but in no way do I think it's inspired by God.
Right.
So, yeah, then, you know, my world kind of came crashing down around me, and for a number of years, I was in a pretty dark place, I think, as I was trying to figure out what this all meant for me and even what this would mean for my wife and I.
Right.
Because my wife was still a Christian. Okay. And, you know, then came the difficult task of sitting her down and talking about how I had changed my mind.
Yeah.
And that was a difficult conversation and difficult for her to hear. And there were tears. And I hated telling her, you know. It was one of the saddest things I had to do in my life. But I had to be honest with her.
Yeah.
And so... I'm thankful that we were able to weather that and come out the other side and still, you know, love each other dearly and have enough other things in common that we can, you know, we can decide to live life together, which is what we decided to do.
Yeah.
And I love her dearly and she loves me dearly and I'm very thankful for that.
I can definitely relate, Dave. Yeah. And I think you make it just a key statement there, like, you're choosing to live with one another. You're choosing to live with each other and accept one another. And I really honestly think that is the key. If both sides are willing to care for one another, regardless of what that other person happens to believe, it can work. It might be difficult, maybe very difficult, but it can work.
Yeah. Well, when I, you know, before I told her, I knew that there was a distinct possibility that this could split us up. Mm-hmm. And that was a pretty, you know, that was a scary proposition. That's the last thing I wanted. And I mean, you know, the other thing I thought about was that, you know, I was the one that was changing drastically. You know, right. She was not changing. I was the one that was introducing this very difficult thing into our marriage. And so I tried to be as graceful as I could in the whole process. So, and thankfully it all worked out. Things are, you know, very good with regards to my wife and I, and she accepts me and I accept her. I still attend church on occasion here and there.
Okay.
A part of it is to support her. And a part of it is still, wondering if I might hear something at some point in time that might change my mind. I kind of doubt it, but I want to be open to anything that might be said that might trigger something in my mind. So I would call myself agnostic, not atheist. I'm still open to the possibility that something out there, you know, exists that is not physical.
Yeah.
And, I don't close the door on that. So I have a good friend who uses a phrase which I love, and that is, he says, I'm just living in the mystery.
Yeah.
And so that's what I really am doing right now. When someone asks me some of the big questions of life, my answer is often, I don't know. And it used to be that when I said that, it was pretty uncomfortable. But now it's a really, really comfortable place to be. And I'm fine with not knowing. And that feels really good.
The irony that I always feel, because I feel very similar, right? Like the vast unknown that we do not know. And I feel like the humility that is taught within Christianity leads one to that. The honesty that is taught within Christianity leads to one to being able to say, I don't know. And I think that's one of the ironies of this whole process is, the seeds of deconstruction, the seeds of deconversion are within Christianity to begin with. And, right. and if you actually are following those, I don't know, guidelines, what have you, and you're seeking truth wherever you find it, you may find it outside of the bubble of church.
Right. And I remember, you know, certain people, when I told them about how I was feeling, would say, well, it's okay to question, you know, and it's good to question things. But at the same time, what they're really saying is it's okay to question as long as you end up on the right side of things.
Right.
You know, just be pretty, you know, it's that slippery slope of don't end up on the wrong side of things. Make sure you come back to the faith.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it didn't work out that way for me. In many ways, I wish it would have. You know, it would have been, my life would have been a whole lot easier to stay in the faith. It's in many ways it's tougher now, but at the same time I feel so much freer, and internally I'm so much happier than I used to be. But life is difficult because the vast majority of people in my world are still evangelical Christians, and that makes it tough sometimes.
Again, Dave, I very very much relate. You know, the, you know, depending on the day, the freedom and the sense of acceptance of the unknown are so wonderful that I would never go back. And then on another day, I think, man, it would be just so much simpler if I could believe again. And I can't, but if you could, maybe it would be easier. I totally get that. I didn't want to interrupt your flow there, but if we can, I want to circle back just on a couple of points. One, I'm curious what your son's response was. So when you had the conversation with him, you said, this book changed my mind. What was his response?
So my son is a very analytical guy. He's a lawyer, a whole lot smarter than his dad. And he figured this all out, you know, long before I did. And so, you know, we'd see him at home reading the Bible, and then we'd see him reading the Quran.
Yeah.
And so this guy is, you know, he's a real reader, and he became an atheist probably in his 20s.
Okay.
Long before I even had a thought of, you know, changing my mind. And so I think he was happy for me. I think he realized how hard it was for me because I'd been in the faith a lot longer than him.
Yeah.
And I think he was also somewhat concerned about, you know, his mother and how his mom would take it. But as he has said to me, truth matters. Mm. And I think that's a mantra that he kind of lives by. And so he was happy to see me. To be able to take a book like that and say, you know what, I believe this is the truth.
Well, it sounds like you have a pretty amazing family, Dave.
Yeah, I've got three kids who are married and who are just wonderful people. And unfortunately, they're not geographically close to me. Well, my son is a couple hours away, but I have a daughter in the UK and another son in Montreal, so he's a ways off. Yeah, great kids, and two would probably be atheist, and one would be questioning, and really open to reading and deciphering for herself what she would call truth.
Okay.
Young family, so pretty busy, and I understand that. I mean, when you're younger and you have a young family, it's something that I think many people just put on hold for a while.
Yeah.
It's mentally exhausting, and you're already going through a pretty mentally exhausting time.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
I think that's probably what I did for many years. So, yeah. So the other thing that happened, I should tell you, David, is that my wife went through cancer.
Oh my, I'm so sorry.
And this was about 5 years ago. And so I had already deconverted. And when she was diagnosed, that was another kind of difficult time for us to go through. And especially in my situation, here I am the non-believer, and the people in our lives are praying for recovery and health. And I can't bring myself to do that. Some difficult conversations with friends and family around that. My wife was an absolute superhero through the whole process. She took it like a champ and thankfully came out of it very well, and she's healthy now.
Oh, very glad to hear that.
But it's just difficult in respect of, you know, people within our group, you know, right away crediting that to God and not to, you know, what I believe to be the truth. And that is good science, good medicine, and good doctors.
Yeah.
And she had all of those. And because of the type of cancer that she had, she got better.
Okay.
But had she had the type that we had initially thought that she had, she would probably be dead now. Mm. So we were just very fortunate with the type of cancer that she had, that she recovered. So
if you've been listening to the podcast, you know that I lost my father-in-law recently to cancer. And so I had the kind of the opposite experience of watching the believers in my life grieve. You know, they went through that prayer process, they went through, and then the grief and the loss and how hollow the "he's in a better place" kinds of statements were. And I just felt the need to be present for them and, you know, literally physically there for them. And, I think just being there, right? Even if you're not the one praying, that's the magic. That's the thing that connects people, that human beings react to. And I'm sure your wife was leaning very heavily on you during that time.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, we, for sure. It was something that we went through together and something that we'll hold as a memory of our lives together, to be quite honest with you. Life is about good times and life is about tough times.
Yeah.
And so that's a memory that we share together, you know. But on the idea of prayer, it's interesting, you know. Early in my deconstruction days, I read a book by Mike McCarg, Finding God in the Waves. And I'm assuming you know the book. And I remember him talking about prayer. And again, it's something I never really thought of when I was a Christian. But it's this idea that regardless how the situation turns out, if you're a Christian, you can say that God was involved, right?
Yes. Yeah.
If the person is healed, then God did it. If the person passes away, then God has a bigger plan for us all. I mean, regardless of what happens, we can, you know, as Christians, we can thank God for what has occurred.
Right.
And I think in that book he talks about praying to a milk jar or something like that, if I'm not mistaken. So for a few weeks or a few months he decides to pray to a milk jar, just to see if it makes any difference. And to his dismay, it does not make any difference.
You know, it's interesting. That's another point of connection. I've told the story before, but I'll tell it again here. My favorite Christian author was a guy named Philip Yancey. Mm. Yancey would generally grapple with the divine hiddenness and, you know, God's silence and, you know, in a relatively honest way. Like, I always loved him for that. But in the last year for me, I was reading a book of his called Prayer. And, you know, and it's, I don't know, it's 400 pages long or something. And I realized, you know, 400 pages of this guy just twisting himself into a knot to try to say prayer is useful or good in any way, shape, or form while also being honest. And it was, I completely recognized, like, he doesn't even really believe this. He hasn't landed on a solid answer for this. It's just, hey, we've always prayed, and so we'll continue to do that kind of thing.
Right. And I think for many Christians, it becomes simply a habit.
Yeah.
You know, especially a prayer before a meal or something like that. I think it's simply habitual. It certainly seems to be with the Christians that I know. It's a tricky thing, prayer, and something that I've chatted with Christians about it in the last few years. And you can have some interesting discussions as people try to weasel their way out of what exactly prayer does and doesn't do. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult thing.
One more thing I wanted to circle back to, you mentioned when you kind of realized it, your heart was beating pretty fast, and that maybe have begun a dark period of time. And I just want to acknowledge the grief that we experience. There's a tremendous amount of loss in that we potentially lose contact with, friends and family, or those ties are weakened. We lose some of the community that we've been reliant on. And ultimately, we lose what felt like a best friend. God was our best friend on some level. And so it's a tremendous amount of grief to go through and loss. And I don't want to, prod you too much, but if you want to talk about what that was like then in those early days of getting through that.
Yeah, I remember a lot of sleepless nights, just rolling over in my bed, just trying to make sense of it all. It was just a huge, huge loss. And, when I started talking to people about it, I got kind of the same response that, many people that I've heard on your show have gotten. And that is, Dave, maybe you were never a Christian.
Mm, yeah.
And, as the saying goes, I firmly believe that I was all in and I was, committed to it 110%. And so that was hard to hear. And I think it's a bit of a defense response.
I agree.
Hoping that it couldn't happen to them like it happened to me. But yeah, it was a time in my life for probably a year or two where it was always in the back of my mind, regardless of what I was doing. I think it was distracting for even for work and for recreation time. And it was difficult. And I think the thing that probably got me through much of it was one or two friends, including my running buddy.
Okay.
And a lot of podcasts. And when I run, that's what I do. I listen to podcasts. Mm-hmm. And yours is one of them. And other stuff like Mind Shift. Uh-huh. And The Thinking Atheist and things like that. It just, it gave me this feeling like I wasn't in it alone.
Yeah.
Because it was a pretty lonely time. Again, I'm an older guy that's not really involved in social media a lot. And so I didn't have that to rely on. So it was a pretty lonely time. A couple of people I could confide in, but it was pretty difficult to tell too many people how I felt.
Yeah.
And I lost a few friends because of it, close friends who just couldn't get past, the new way that I was thinking about faith or lack thereof. And so that kind of scared me off from telling other people about it.
Okay.
And so there are even still people in my life that I haven't completely, told about how I feel about things because I'm just too concerned about losing them, to be quite honest with you. And so, it's difficult. I really do my best not to live a double life because that's not what I want to do. And for the most part, I don't have to. I mean, my family and close friends, they know. I want to be genuine. I want to be, I want to live life on my terms, and I think every person deserves to do that.
The way we say it on the podcast is you don't owe that to anyone. You don't have to reveal yourself, your inner heart to the world, which is kind of juxtaposed against the way that Christianity teaches you. You have to, wear your heart on your sleeve all the time. You can hold some things back. Like those are internal, those are your thoughts, they're your private thoughts. You don't owe anyone anything.
I had a couple people say to me, don't you think your dad would be really disappointed in you? I forgot to tell you, my dad died when I was 12.
Okay.
He was a pretty young guy. He was 45 years old, massive heart attack.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry.
But there are some people that are still in my life that knew my dad. And they would say things to me like, you know, when I told them how I felt about Christianity, they would say, don't you think your dad would be disappointed in you? And I said, well, I don't live for my dad. I live for myself.
Yeah.
It's quite possible that my dad would be disappointed in me. And him and I would have to have a heart-to-heart conversation. But just as much as I don't want my kids living for me, I don't live for my dad.
Yeah.
And as you say, everyone has a right to, you know, to live life on their own terms. Mm. And I would, that's what I want for my kids. I want them to live life on their own terms.
Yeah. Well said. Definitely well said. I want to return really quick to the running with your running buddy. Like, what were those conversations like? Was he receptive to your change of heart? I never did hear whether that person is a person of faith or not. So what was that like?
Yeah. So this guy is a doctor, just an awesome, awesome person. And a guy who attended Mennonite churches through all his life and grew up a Mennonite as well. But was definitely questioning faith before I did.
Okay.
And so I would probably call him an agnostic.
Yeah.
We just had a lot of deep conversations about, about the Bible, about God. And, you know, when you're running for 3 hours straight, you can cover a lot of ground.
Yeah.
And so he was probably, one of the guys that really started me questioning things first, because a lot of things, you know, taking the Bible for granted, taking the existence of God for granted, those were things that he didn't do. And, mm-hmm. The more I talked to him about that, the more it surprised me, but it got me thinking.
Yeah.
You know, this is a pretty smart guy, and if this is what he believes, maybe I got to give this a second look. Maybe I've got to question really, the things that I've been taught my entire life.
Yeah.
And so he was definitely instrumental on my journey of questioning.
That's a good way to put it. That's almost the default position. The default position of God exists. The default position that the Bible is authoritative. And if you just question that a little bit, you gain a radically different perspective.
Right. And for many Christians, that's a difficult thing to do. Right. And I think they know that it potentially can be a slippery slope, and it's just too much for them to bear.
Yeah.
And I totally understand. I mean, I totally understand people staying in the faith. And, as many people as there are in the faith, there are a variety of reasons as to why they are there. Mm-hmm. And I think much of it for many people is the idea that life is difficult, life is hard, and we're all searching for peace of mind and, a reason to wake up the next morning and to be able to make it through that day. And, in many respects, I've had a pretty easy life, but there are many people who haven't. Mm-hmm. And I understand, why people embrace faith and accept it and really don't want to leave it, because it's comforting. It's definitely comforting.
Yeah.
And to leave it is uncomfortable. And so why would you leave comfort for uncomfort? And I think, for many people, they question things, but just cannot get themselves to the point of questioning it to the point where they would begin to lose their faith. It's just too difficult because they realize there's so much to lose. And it's a case of losing your community and losing some friends and potentially even losing family. And that's a big cost to bear.
Absolutely.
And so I bear no ill will to anyone who decides to stay in the faith.
Ending on an up note, it sounds like, you know, running is definitely important to you. Listening to podcasts are. Any books or anything, any recommendations that you would have for somebody who finds themselves in a similar position where they've been a person of faith for most of their life, but they're just starting to ask questions? Any advice for that kind of person?
Well, I would say just don't be afraid to question. And, you know, the things that you were taught throughout your life, just make sure that you do some critical thinking about them. I think I was, you know, for myself, I don't think I was ever taught to critically think about things like this. Mm-hmm. And so critical thinking skills are important in dealing with important questions. And this certainly is an important question. So I would encourage people to question what they were taught. When it comes to sources, there's just so many good podcasts that I think are fantastic, including your own. And I would definitely recommend Mike McCarg's book, Finding God in the Waves. Mm-hmm. He ends up at a place of spirituality at the end, but quite a different place than the evangelical place where he first started. And I think it's a really good example of a guy who was all in and who believed it all and who found his way out of, a strict evangelical faith. I read a book, I read Sapiens, which you probably, okay. I would assume you probably read as well. And I would recommend that wholeheartedly. Just a wonderful, overarching view of how we got to now. Mm-hmm. And, so.
That's awesome. Dave, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Final thoughts on the episode. So there are a number of similarities between Dave's story and mine, including losing a father young, running becoming both a physical and mental health benefit to us, the truth mattering, and being unsatisfied with the answers that Christianity presents once you begin to scratch the surface looking for truth. Our unequally yoked marriages with people whom we love deeply and are deeply committed to by choice, by volition. There are a number of things there. Dave has an incredible way with words. I really want you to go and listen to this episode again. As usual, I begin to write down quotes and things that I want to add to the show notes and to this segment, and I could just write the entire thing. Dave is a man of relatively few words, but everything that he says is profound. I've really appreciated Dave's honesty in talking about how difficult a process this was. After 50 years of faith, that it is non-trivial to let go of that for yourself personally and the relationships that you have, how that impacts that. I was particularly touched by his description of needing to tell his wife and how difficult that was and hating having to tell her. I can relate to that so deeply. As well as him being there for his wife during her cancer scare. He couldn't pray for her, but he could be present. He could be with her and do love rather than just praying. They both chose to be committed to one another and to remain in the relationship. And that is a beautiful, beautiful thing. I also deeply appreciate Dave's agnostic position. I do want to quote him here. He says he continues to go to church, wondering if I might hear something that might change my mind. I want to be open to anything that might be said that might trigger something in my mind. I would call myself an agnostic. I'm still open to the possibility that something out there exists that is not physical. And when someone asks me the big questions of life, my answer is, I don't know. I'm fine with not knowing. I really, really appreciate that position. The humility, the desire for truth, to quote his son, truth matters. And the ability to change one's mind, given evidence, is, I think, the characteristic of our time that we must have, given the level of disinformation and misinformation that is out in the world these days. And ultimately, Dave's deconstruction and deconversion are similar to mine as well, in that he asked the question, after having read the book on evolution from his son, if Genesis 1 and 2 are not real, what else might not be true? That is the most dangerous question you can ask yourself, and ultimately leads to the house of cards coming down. I want to thank Dave for being on the podcast, for telling his story with such honesty, with humility, with a desire for truth. Dave, thank you so much for being on the podcast. The Secular Grace thought of the week, to quote Dave's son, is truth matters. I'm going to bounce around here with a few thoughts that are in my head right now, but all centering around truth matters. I've said this a few times, but I'm beginning to hear apologetics in many different contexts. So not just within the religious context, but within political, economic, sales even. For me, I now have this almost physical reaction when I begin to hear someone use apologetic arguments that are clearly just reinforcing something that they already believe, even when it's something that I agree with, almost especially when it's something that I agree with. And it is because, for me, truth matters. And even if my most dearly held, precious beliefs are being questioned, I want to know. My identity is not so tied up in my beliefs that I cannot be proven wrong by evidence, because truth matters. I care more about the truth than I do about the things that I believe or hold dear. Again, I loved Dave's expression of his agnosticism, being open-minded to the possibility that something is out there, living in the mystery, like his friend said, and answering the big questions with, I don't know. In many ways, I think I've come to stronger conclusions in my personal life of having ruled out some possibilities based on the existing evidence, but I am always open to evidence, to changing my mind, given in some cases what would be trivial evidence to produce. The non-existence of expected evidence has some evidential quality in itself. The moment in time that we live in, with the level of disinformation and misinformation, and here I'm not just talking about politics, but almost in every area of our lives, unlike any other time in history, our problem is not accessed information, it is filtering information. We have a fire hose of information thrown at us on a daily basis. And it is almost not humanly possible to decipher through all that information to what is true and what is not. The quality characteristic of our time that is necessary is critical thinking and the ability to filter that information and the ability to question even the things that we desperately want to believe in. Be willing to risk that. Be brave. Be courageous. Look for the truth wherever it is found, even if it's outside of your belief systems, because truth matters. I'm very excited that next week is Arlene guest hosting with her friends. I am so excited to share that conversation with you. Arlene is our community manager. She's been doing a tremendous amount of work. She does copywriting for the show notes. She is managing the community in the Deconversion Anonymous group on Facebook. And she is kind of the glue that is holding this community together. So thanks to Arlene for all the work she's doing. And I'm super excited that she gets a chance to be the star of the show. So look forward to that next week. Also, a number of interviews coming up that are just wonderful and fantastic. So until then, my name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. Time for the footnotes. The beat is called Waves from Makai Beats. Links will be in the show notes. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can promote it on your social media. You can subscribe to it in your favorite podcast application. And you can rate and review it on podchaser.com. You can also support the podcast by clicking on the affiliate links for books on gracefulatheist.com. If you have podcast production experience and you would like to participate with the podcast, please get in touch with me. Have you gone through a faith transition and do you need to tell your story? Reach out. If you are a creator or work in the deconstruction, deconversion, or secular humanism spaces and would like to be on the podcast, just ask. If you'd like to financially support the podcast, there's links in the show notes. To find me, you can Google Graceful Atheist, you can Google deconversion, you can Google secular grace, you can send me an email, gracefulatheist@gmail.com, or you can check out the website, gracefulatheist.com. My name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. This has been the Graceful Atheist Podcast.